They change cultures. They're heat seekers. They run at adversity and embrace change. These are the Room Tilters.
All right, DJ, let's go.
Let's get it, man.
We're here, back on the Room Tilters podcast. Excited to for this episode because it's going to be a little different than probably a lot of our episodes. We wanted to talk a little bit about adversity. We know that certainly Room Tilters are those that can handle adversity, have a certain response to it, have a plan for it. This may be a little bit of a departure from like the Room Tilters brand, right? This is an opportunity, I think, for us to have our listeners gain a better understanding of who we are, why we're here, why we're doing what we're doing, and why we're passionate about people development. And so I'm excited about this.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited. I think that, you know, the listeners are going to get an opportunity to know us better. On today's episode, I'm gonna have the chance to ask you some questions about what makes you who you are, and get to know a little bit more about your background. So I think this is gonna be a really cool experience in podcast.
I'm excited about it. I'm also nervous about it. So yeah, we'll see.
That's fair.
We'll see how this goes, and hopefully our our listeners right now might just be our parents, so our mom and our moms. So I think it'll be fine.
We did get some early data. We have three listeners right now. So
who's the third?
Demi.
Okay,
Demi.
So your daughter.
My daughter Demi is.
Yeah. So we got a couple listeners. So those listeners, this will be gentle.
That's right.
So, but yeah. So we're excited about just kind of beginning to get how the listeners get to know us. I think we're gonna take some time to make this the Harry episode,
Yeah,
I guess.
We'll
next
do that.
Time we'll do a DJ episode.
Right, and I'll be on this episode. I'm gonna be the host. And we'll start out, Harry. You know, I know a ton about you, and kind of what makes you who you are. I think it would be really cool today to talk to the listeners and say, you know, who is Harry? You know, what makes Harry who he is? And I think we'll start with your adversity story. So Harry, you know, growing up Richmond, Virginia, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, big into sports. Tell us about some of the things that were difficult and challenging, you know, growing up there.
Well, I had a pretty awesome childhood, on the surface. A lot of hardships, and I had everything I needed. My parents were great. I went to great schools. Had great friends, healthy, the whole nine. I think ultimately, just to kind of get to the cut to the chase, I mean, my adversity is something I live with every day. Like many of, maybe some of the listeners, you know, I have something that every time I brush my teeth, I can kind of, that the mirror is kind of showing me my adversity. And I have vitiligo. For those who have never seen me before, I have vitiligo. Those who have seen me know this already, but vitiligo, it's a skin condition, right, where where basically, you know, some of your cells have died and those skin cells die and you have a loss of pigment, right? So that's the non-scientific way to say it. But so, you know, I have, you know, white skin. I'm a black dude with white skin in various places. So, I've grown up with this condition that I've ultimately spent most of my time trying to hide from. And it's impossible to do so. So, that's the mm-hmm. short and quick. You know, I mean, it's been, kind of lived in a world where my confidence has been challenged, you know, my self-image has been challenged, and then the ripple effects from that. Just like again, many of the listeners that have their own challenges that that they have to confront that affect their confidence and different things like that. So I've kind of been living with that and still live with it today.
Right. So again, what are some of the biggest challenges with living with vitiligo, like that you have on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I mean, you know, today it's little stuff, right? I mean, just certainly there's a health concern from the standpoint of just taking care of your skin, putting sunscreen on, right? Outside of that, it's all mental, right? And the challenge with vitiligo, I mean, let me just set the stage. Let me kind of go back.
Yeah.
So, I at least from my recollection, I got vitiligo when I was about 7 years old.
Okay.
Or at least that's when it kind of showed up, 7, 8 years old, something like that. And so, it came kind of a slow arrival, right? It didn't just like all of a sudden I had all this vitiligo. It kind of showed up on my eyelids, my knees, whatever. So, when you're 7, 8, 9, and then you get into like, you know, teenager years, the challenge is just, you know, what people think about you, right? Or at least what your perception of it. And it's just like, that's one reason why acne creams and, you know, Puff Daddy sells so many acne creams, because people, you know, they want their skin to look good, right? And so just the confidence level around what people are saying, what they might be saying, how they're going to think, what, how they feel about you. You know, it's just challenging to deal with as a young person.
Right.
It's challenging to deal with as a grown, as a grown ass man too. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard. So, I mean, like, I think that, you know, so this, the daily challenge is just looking yourself in the mirror and being confident about like what you look like and how you're presenting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I, it's interesting because, and you and I've talked about this before. It's, you know, you told, you opened up with this story in with me some time ago, and you talked about how it can affect your confidence. And if anybody's ever met you, you are very confident. In you know, when you come across very confident and sure of yourself. And so tell us a little bit about that and what, how that feels internally, but then it also, you know, some of the things that you do when you're out in the world to when dealing with this skin condition.
So what's funny is I don't feel that way, right?
Okay.
Like I don't feel like I don't think of myself as a confident person. Now I do see myself as a fantastic actor, right? Performer potentially, because I know that like I put a lot of work into you know, emoting a certain way, right? And as you know, as with the last 5 or 6 years, I do things purposefully to put myself out there, right? You know, I try to do one thing new every year. I played ice hockey when I never played ice hockey for a second, and then I gave it up. Right? I do a lot of karaoke. That's not just because I love Prince and Michael Jackson, although I do. I'll do some improv classes. I'll use social media in certain ways to put myself out there. So, I mean, but those are like painful things for me, right? And I do them anyway because it's more of an exercise on, okay, let me get uncomfortable, right? And because typically, every time, nothing bad has happened, right? In fact, usually there's good things that would come from it. So, I mean, every single, there's not been one time where I'm like, man, I put myself out there and that backfired. That's never happened. Not once, right? And so it's just a matter of still doing it. You still have those walls that you face. I mean, I think that, but I certainly don't see myself as a confident person. I don't see myself as an extrovert. I do extrovert type stuff. You know what I mean? Like I'm extrovert-ish, right? I'm more of an introvert naturally. I think I've heard of something called an ambivert, somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
That's probably where I am, where I try to, you know, if I feel like I need to be an extrovert, or I will exercise that or flex that muscle, or if there's certain environments that I'm really comfortable in that I might be more extroverted. But I'm an introvert by nature. And I think that's okay. I mean, we have, you know, there's a lot of leaders that, and people that you think might be extroverts or be extrovert type positions that are actually introverts. And it's just, you know, we're all different, right? But I mean, I think, listen, my vitiligo, I think has certainly shaped who I am quite a bit. There's all sorts of things that have shaped who I am. It's not just one thing. And a lot of them are positive,
right?
Experiences, and certainly the environment that I grew up in, going to a private school in Richmond, Virginia, called Collegiate, where, you know, there's a lot of kind of, you know, elite people that are, you know, great at what they do, they're beautiful, they're fun, they have, you know, they can afford a fantastic school, live in a great neighborhood, it's a great community. And so, you know, like, I wasn't lacking for anything. Right.
Right.
But I just think that, you know, I spent a lot of my younger years trying to be like everybody else. Right. Or like anybody else. Right. Not even everybody else, just anybody else, which is the difference. Right. If I could be anybody other than me, I'll take it. Like that's how I thought about things. Right. Hmm. And so,
which is interesting, yeah. Because the people that know you, I mean, this Harry was homecoming king. Division one, two sport athlete. So I can imagine, even including your younger brother, looking up to you and saying, hey, I want to be like that when I grow up. So you have all these people that are looking at you, and internally you're dealing with this adversity. Is there an experience that when you go back, and we'll go back to like when you were a kid or even just like a young adult, that really stands out to you that kind of exemplifies like either you like running right at this adversity or just having to face it?
I mean, I had to face. I mean, I was facing it every day, right? I don't think I can say that I ever ran at it as a kid, a young adult, if you will, right? I always ran far, far away from it, to be completely honest with you, right? I'd love to be on this podcast and say, yeah, I dominated adversity. Like, I looked at it and punched it in the face, and I wasn't worried. Like, I was scared shitless every time I have to take my shirt off, right? Or every time I have to go to the pool, or whatever, right? I think that, the first time that I, one of the times, at least one of the times, I who knows, my memory is not great, right? But I think one of the times that I feel like I finally was able to use this adversity to tell my story and see a benefit from it and talk about it openly was in an interview when I was about 26, 27 years old for Stryker Medical. And I had this boss, his name was Bud Sikoraki. Well, he ended up being my boss, so I guess it was a spoiler alert because I got the job. But Bud, I remember him asking me, at the next interview to give us some idea of who you're going to be when nobody's watching, right? When the camera's not on, if you will, because that's a lot of that job, right? Sales and having the autonomy to build your business with people not watching you every day. Who are you going to be when nobody's watching, when the chips are down? So I had some time to think about that, and I said, you know what? This is, I think, my opportunity to really leave no doubt on who I am when nobody's watching and what my true character is and why. And so I told that story about my vitiligo and how, I face adversity daily, and this is how I respond to it, and this is what I've done, and the advantage that I've found now that I've been in, business, which is that, I'll walk into an office, somebody I'm trying to sell to, and the cool thing is not really being forgettable. Is always something that a salesperson wants to be, unforgettable, right?
Right.
Well, I have that on accident, right? I have that, maybe not so much on accident, I should say, but I have that capability to be unforgettable just because of the way I look, right? And so I was telling Bud about that and what that means and some of the challenges I've had, and I know that that was impactful for him because he brought it up about a year later, right, and hadn't forgotten it himself. Mm. So, that transition of kind of starting to begin to understand who you are. But listen, the reality is this. When you're 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. That already is a challenging time.
Right.
Right? Middle school. It's already challenging. It's the most brutal time. You got a daughter that's entering middle school.
That's right.
It's tough.
It is.
Right? And then you get into high school and you kind of have you're developing, you have a new group of friends. Maybe you're kind of starting to figure out, where you want to go to college, different things. But now you relationships and girlfriends and all these different things that are important to you at the time. Where the way I look kind of was really affected by that, right? Mm-hmm. And then you go to college and it's kind of a whole new scenery. Your parents aren't around and you're refiguring yourself out a little bit, right?
Right.
So for me, it wasn't until after college, a few years after college, where my confidence began to grow. I became a little more bullish on who I am and non-negotiable mm-hmm. about things that I want to do and who I want to do it with.
Right.
And so, like I'm 35. It's probably in the last 9-10 years where I've kind of said, okay, this is who I am. I'm not afraid of it, but even today, I still face a lot of the confidence issues that I face with my vitiligo, and I still run from it often, more than I should, and I know it, right? And so that's why I try to put things in place, specifically to kind of run at it.
Right.
I know that I can sing, right? I'm not bragging, it's just the truth, right?
That's right.
I've known that since I was 11 or 12 years old, right? But it took me until I was 17 to maybe sing in front of anybody, okay? And then I still hated it, right? And then, but now, everybody knows me for doing a lot of karaoke, but it's not, and I love it, but it's part of it's just because I like to do it to kind of keep myself out there.
Right.
I never would have used Instagram to record any type of music or video of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done that recently as an exercise to put myself out there. It sucks to push send every time, right? And there's a lot of reasons for that, right? I have some followers on Instagram. My brothers, people know my brother and my sister-in-law. So I know that people are going to see this, right? And so it's painful to send it out because you're like, oh man, what are the responses going to be, right?
I love how you're doing that intentionally though. I wondered why. I think it was 2 years ago when you said, hey, D, I'm about to start playing ice hockey. And I'm sitting there thinking, why is this brother trying to play ice hockey? And so, but it makes sense. It makes sense. And like, you know, a lot of what we talk about is running right at adversity. And for you to model that and exemplify that is something that is admirable. I you know, something you and I talk about a lot is authenticity. And it's funny because you bring up the story with Bud. And in that story, like, you were your authentic self, you know, and really speaking from the heart of what makes you different and unique, and how you were going to use that, and not look at it as something that was holding you back, but look at it as an opportunity. Is there anything else that you, when you think about your story, just the Harry Wilson story, where authenticity played a role, and where you used it to be able to use it as an advantage?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, man. I mean, it's a little deep, really, because that just from the standpoint of, I have to kind of like reach back to the memory bank, and like, I'm a ex-football player, so like, I don't know if my memory's that great. My brain's a little rattled, but I don't, you know, honestly, I don't know. You know, I don't spend a lot of time, too much time thinking about like my authenticity and like kind of capturing, you know, excerpts of how it's affected others. I do spend a lot of time thinking about authenticity as it relates to who I'm around, like my surroundings. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of my most valued kind of characteristics of a leader. So my leaders, people who have led me, and the people that I'm working with, and peers and clients and whatever, I really value authenticity. Obviously, with authenticity comes trust, and with trust comes you know long term relationships where things, great things can happen.
Yep.
And whatnot. And so, you know, I really value authenticity. I just try to be, you know, who I am as much as I can be today. You know what I mean? Because that wasn't me when I was growing up, man. I mean, I said, I can say this now. This feels kind of therapeutic. I wish those who are here, I'm not laying on a couch. Like, you know, this is not a psych, you know.
That's
this
right.
This is, I'm sitting in a chair. But it's... It's one of those things where I know, looking back again from third, fourth grade on, right, that, like I said, I wanted to be like anybody else. So I was always trying to kind of assimilate and like elevate myself. And what came with that was choices to, you know, stretch the truth, or lie, whatever you want to use. But little stuff, right? Like, hey, I'm a year older than I am. Hey, I used to live here. Not true. Right. Hey, I did this. No, didn't do that. Right. Just like little things that you think are inconsequential. Right. But and they probably were then. Right. But then as you get older, mm-hmm. and those truths that were stretched are like, you know, kind of like become fake news. Right. then all of a sudden your character comes into question. Right. And so, I mean, like, so I think that, you know, authenticity is so important to me now because I'm trying to like recover from, you know, faking it to make it, mm-hmm. all this time.
Right? Yeah, and I think a lot of people can really relate to that. You know, the insecurity, the you know, trying to be something, you know, that you're not. I think everybody has experienced that to some degree. I can tell you, like, for me, just, you know, being best friends with you and seeing how you interact on a day-to-day basis, you know, one of the things that you do exceptionally well, and, you know, I'm big on communication and talking to people. I'm very relational. But when I talk to you and we're having a conversation, you are actively listening. I think a lot of people listen to, you almost try to figure out what they want to say next. And with you, you process. And you're looking for, when we speak or you're talking to anybody, you're looking for truth within that. And you don't just take any words as truth. You'll ask follow-up questions and really peel back the onion. And so I think that is how you find and identify authenticity. And it's something that I don't know if you actively do this or you sense yourself doing this, but this is something that I've seen and been able to experience.
No, I mean, that's good. I mean, I like that. It feels good that you've noticed that, because it is important to me. I don't think I... I don't truly actively do that. I mean, like, you know, I'm not like purposefully necessarily, but I do believe that, especially in leadership roles, that, you know, I think the best leaders listen, right? Maybe that, you know, in some cases they're the last to talk in a room, that type of thing. So, like, you know, just from like a self, you know, self-help, you know, leadership, if I'm reading a leadership book, like, I've read that before, and I would try to practice that as best I can. It's hard. We do a lot of, you know, help, you know, for in our business, we do a lot of, you know, conversations via conference call, and, you know, you don't know when somebody's done talking, and you don't know and what their body language is and stuff like that. But I mean, I just, you know, I just think it's important to really, because a lot of times somebody brings you, you know, comes to you with something, and what they come to you at first is not the real issue, right? So as you listen, the real issue unveils itself, you know, for example. So I mean, I just, yeah, I mean, listening is important, right, in any relationship, because that's how expectations get mismanaged, because they were never heard to begin with, right? So I think with relationships, listening is critical, because you miss out on what, you know, you mismanage expectations because you never heard them.
Right. Yeah,
think about any relationship you've been in, business, friendship, you know, spouse, you know, kind of like girlfriends in high school, college, whatever.
Yep.
You know, acquaintances, whatever it might be. It's just if they haven't worked out, it's mismanaged expectations, be there on both sides or one side or the other. So, I mean,
it's a really good point.
That's really important. But
yeah. And the other thing is, too, is like, as a leader, or, you know, even growing this business, there is so much thrown at you on a day-to-day basis. You know, your ability to identify the truth, right? And then, you know, at that point, once you've identified the truth, again, talking about authenticity, then you're able to provide better solutions, right? Or, you know, specific solutions for whatever challenge that you're dealing with. Is there anything recently from a challenge perspective that you can think about where you've kind of had to model this whole listening and then providing a solution to get a great result? Is there anything that you can think about there?
Well, we started this business, right? Started Limitless Minds. I mean, it's been really hard, right? It has not been easy. Anybody who's listening to this that started a business knows, like, is nodding their head and knows it's hard to start a business, right? I mean, being an entrepreneur is a lonely job, even if you have co-founders, right? And on top of that, we're in different cities, all of us. Maybe we have a consulting business, so we travel, we see each other a ton. But, you know, when you have different ideas and you're really passionate about what you do, and you may not agree on a path, you know, I think that the challenges are, again, in those relationships and those people. And I think that, again, setting expectations and listening and being authentic about what you really feel and think is crucial to getting through that. Because if you've gone on a journey together, like in our example as co-founders, and you're passionate about what you're doing, then, like, it's like love, right? That's the start. That's the beginning, right? It's like with your relationship with your wife, right? You know, it's like we love each other. So when there's challenges, if we go back to that, then we'll be able to get through this stuff, because we're on the same page, right? We're on the same page as far as how we feel about each other, our families. So let's just talk about it. Let's set the expectation. Let's agree upon the expectation and move forward. Same thing in our business as co-founders. It's like, okay, like, we want to impact millions of people, not like 10 people, not 100. Hopefully 10,000, hopefully then 100,000, hopefully 1 million and beyond, right?
Yep.
Then in the United States. Then we want to go global, right? Absolutely. Okay, so we know we want to impact people. There's a million different ways we can do it. We know that there's only one way to do it right, really, right? As far as how we really need to handle this thing. So let's just keep going back to those things. And how do we get there, right? And so it's just, so I mean, that's a more of a broad answer. I mean, you know, authenticity and kind of listening and expectations are all important. And, you know, those that are listening, I mean, it's like, I think it's the only way that as a budding leader or a leader or somebody who's leading, you know, wants to lead a group or just be effective with other individuals in their life. I mean, it's
right.
It's king. I think authenticity is king.
Yeah. And I think too, and we talk a lot about this, is that when you're authentic, it helps you to be able to connect, to build trust with people. And I don't really think that you can get to the results or any kind of goal if you don't have trust within a team or with, you know, if you're working with another company. And so that is critical when trying to build trust in a foundation for a great relationship.
You know, I was telling you last night, we were talking about doing this podcast, and You know, I was telling you last night that if somebody gave me whatever $1 million and said, "Hey, before I give you this $1 million, if you can, you can actually use this to get rid of your vitiligo. Like, what do you want to do?" Like my, like honestly, like my honest to goodness answer at 35 years old would be, "Huh, like that'd be great. Yeah, give the $1 million to Dr. whoever, and I'd love to get rid of my vitiligo." Right? I think you were shocked by that.
I was.
But I mean, like, it's just, that's just the truth. You know what I mean? Like, I've gone this long. It's like, why not? Hey, well, what's the big deal? Like, obviously, you know, you have a great family. You're married. You have all these things that are great going on. Like, I can't believe that this still affects you, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it does. And it, and I, and honest to God, like, I would love to try my next 35 years without it. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Without it. It'd be great. Now, the only other thing is that if that same $1 million, you could say, hey, or, you know, you could do that, or if you give the, you know, you could use the same $1 million to make sure your daughters do not have this condition. Obviously, I would pay double, right? Mm. I think my biggest fear is that they have vitiligo, which is hereditary. It can be hereditary, and I think, and you asked me, you know, like, what would you do if one of your daughters had vitiligo? And I do not know the answer. You know what I mean? It frightens me. You know, and I don't know the answer to that really. Mm-hmm. Right. I have some thoughts. I don't know the answer.
Right.
But you know, like, I'm at 35 years old. I'm my most confident self so far. Right. But I have like a mountain to climb with confidence. And, this right here is part of that. You know, this taking this risk of starting a business, taking this risk to do a podcast is all a part of that journey. It's, you know, it's purposeful. And so, you know, I think that those that are listening need to be thinking about, what can I purposefully do, right, to extend myself, to be limitless, right? To, you know, and whatever that fear is, whatever it is for individuals, you know, public speaking, taking the job that you want to take, or leaving your job to take this opportunity that's maybe like risky, or whatever it is, right? Like, you only have one life. You have one life. You don't even know how long that life is.
You don't.
Right? It's not, you know, it's not like, okay, you got 100 years. Okay, great. I'm 35. I got 65, you know, I got 65 more. Cool. I got some time. Like, my dad died at 55. You told me I was done in 20 years. What am I? I need to do something now. Right?
Right.
I had a great friend that died at 35 years old last week. And I know a year ago, he had no idea that was what's coming for him next. Right? What would you do?
Hmm.
You know, I'm not leaving here with regrets. I know that.
That's right.
So,
I mean, no, I love that. And I think that's really inspiring for me, for anybody that's listening. Because again, I think that when people look at you and what you've been able to accomplish in a very short period of time, you're 35 years old, right?
Yeah, barely.
He calls himself a millennial.
There's different studies. There's different data.
Yes,
there's different data that supports it. I don't know if I want to be a millennial or not. I see that it's always negatively kind of say, "Oh, you're a millennial," but like, I know it means I'm younger than you. So like,
that,
you know,
that is a true or neutral statement, definitely. But I think it's really inspiring to anybody that's listening to see that, you know what, it's not about whether or not you're going to have adversity or you're going to have insecurities. It's about how you approach it. And I think that you've approached it in a way that, and again, it's like what I like about, again, this comes back to your true, just the truth and how you always just state the truth. But it's not about like, I conquered this and now I'm good. It's about consistently getting better. We talk a lot about conditioning. You know, when you were an athlete, it was physical conditioning. Now we're talking a lot about mental conditioning. And conditioning in and of itself, it's not a one and done thing. It's something that you have to consistently do over time. So I think it's awesome that you're sharing this. And I think there's a lot of value in the wisdom that you've been able to share with us today. So,
no, I mean, I'm happy to tell my story, right? My adversity story. I think it's important for people to kind of get to know us. And, you know, most of us, you know, there's some sort of layers of adversity that kind of shape who we are. I think that I want to leave with a call to action, if you will. And I think that call to action, just for those who are listeners, to, you know, seek that constant quest for knowledge, for new experiences. I would challenge, you know, each of the people that are listening to identify one thing that they wouldn't do today, right, that they're willing to do tomorrow, and try it, right, and extend themselves. You know, little thing like post it on Facebook, Instagram, whatever, social media, to kind of hold yourself accountable. you know, your friends will hold yourself accountable for it. You know, because you know when you put something on Facebook or Instagram, it's official.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. I mean, relationships get determined on there. Like it's official. So put it on social media or whatever. But do it. You know, I mean, do it. It's not like nothing bad's going to happen, right? I mean, unless your fear is you want to skydive, and then I can't tell you. I can't co-sign that. Nothing bad's gonna happen. But do it. You know what I mean? Be fearless. You know, breaking through fear, I think, is, you know, critical to, you know, living kind of your best life.
You've been listening to the Room Tilters podcast, hosted by DJ Eitzen and Harry Wilson, presented by Limitless Minds.